Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, I shouldn't say, like, with me, as always, because we haven't done a show in roughly a month or so. So,
yeah.
when we, it's not always, when we rarely do a show, that you will be with me.
I tell you, it's been an interesting month that we haven't done a show. There's been... I mentioned this on Twitter. I've had some stuff going on that has preempted my ability or my availability. Had some family stuff I got to take care of. Some of it planned, some of it unplanned. The unplanned definitely threw me off for a couple of weeks there. And we're progressing forward in the right direction. So I know there's a lot of people itching for podcast content, and we're doing our best, I promise, but the family stuff couldn't be avoided, and it kept me away. So we're getting that settled though, like I said, and happy to be back, happy to be talking to you again, Joe.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure as always. No better time for it to happen. We did miss OTAs and mini camp. I'm sure that'll get sprinkled in a little bit here and there. That's really not going to be the crux of our discussion today. We're going to talk about the rookies, talk about the expectations of them coming up this season as we barrel towards training camp in the middle of July. I should say middle, late July, 6 weeks from now, right? I think is the...
Yeah, roughly. Yeah, that sounds about right.
First up off the bat, let's hit with the transactions. They're not big transactions, or, you know, we usually do injuries transactions at the beginning of shows. Number one, Steel Chambers, who we would have been discussing today as part of the Lions 2024 UDFA group. He has already been released by the ball club and picked up by the New England Patriots. I don't know if you want to talk about that or if we'll get to that with the people like Steel Chambers. They were looking forward to Steel Chambers in the Honolulu Blue and Silver.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, Steel Chambers was one of the top, I think, three players of the undrafted players the Lions had that I think people thought had a chance at the roster. He was the sixth or seventh linebacker heading into, you know, throughout OTAs and minicamp. And it looked like he was in a pretty good spot. The Lions have historically kept six off the ball linebackers. He would have been in contention for that if they were going to keep six again. But with the new special teams rules, we don't know if that's going to be five or six players at the linebacker group. Regardless, though, he seemed like he was in a good spot. And he was paid quite a bit. He got a nice little chunk of change in order to sign.
$225,000 guaranteed.
Steel was only got around 90, I think, right?
Like,
I think,
75. Yeah, 90 guaranteed. I'm sorry, I was reading the wrong line. I'm looking at Isaiah Williams. Yeah, Steel Chambers is 90 total guaranteed.
Yeah, so 15,000 will be like a cap hit right now. Or actually, no, because it's past June 1st, they'll only take a third of that. But anyway, it'd be a little cap hit for Steel Chambers. They'll have to pay a little bit for him next year, but it's going to be minuscule in compared to the, you know, the grand scheme of things and the value of the salary cap. But regardless, he was a guy we thought was in a good spot, and they elected to move on from him after OTAs, and they signed, or I'm sorry, after minicamp, and they signed Ben Niemann, formerly, I think most recently, was with the Broncos, to replace him. He's been in the league a few years, played linebacker at Iowa. I think he was like a starter for multiple years at Iowa. Again, kind of a heavy special teams guy, but it was a bit surprising to see them move on from Steel Chambers. Like you mentioned, the Patriots picked him up almost immediately. And, well, they claimed him, right? They had the, for those who, if you're not familiar, the waiver wire is in place now. And it's still based on last season's record. So when a player gets released, they go onto the waiver wire. And the Panthers have the first option to try and claim him. Washington has the second option, and then the Patriots have the third option. It just keeps going like the draft order. The Patriots claimed him. So It's possible other teams put a claim in for him as well, but it didn't matter. Patriots had the highest of the pecking order, and so they land Steel Chambers. The fact that player 90, essentially, or maybe he was like player 85, but he was cut because he was being replaced by another linebacker. He was the one that was, you know, it was a little easier to let him go. The fact that that player is already being claimed, I think, is it speaks to the depth of this team, right? Like, it's one thing if you have a player that is close to making the 53 and you release them and they get claimed, but it's different when it's like, hey, we got this UDFA, you know, and you know, we're going to move on from him in June, and then teams are actively, you know, putting waivers in to try and claim him. It speaks, I think, to where this roster is and how it's considerably different than what we've seen in years past. So yeah, Steel Chambers is a Patriot. And it's funny, like, a lot of people on social media defaulted to, oh, he's going to have like a Pro Bowl career with the Patriots.
Yeah,
now,
well,
right?
Of course.
It's how the turntables have turned, right? Like, how
very Michael Scott of you,
right? It wasn't that long ago that every Patriots player that was cut, the Lions were trying to claim. Right. Now, you know, Lions cut a guy and the Patriots are trying to go after him. So it's
they've had a little bit of success taking on Lions castoffs.
Sure. Sure. They also had the third worst record in the league. So
we really can't call them the geniuses anymore. Unless, you right. know, unless the replacements they have lined up are the right folks. So we'll see.
It's just an interesting juxtaposition from where things were just a few years ago, when the Patriots were one of those top teams and the Lions were the ones fighting for scraps. And now here we are, and those roles have been reversed, and it's a good feeling. I'd rather be on this end of things than on the other.
All right. So the next player who's no longer on this end of things is cornerback Craig James. He was released with an injury settlement.
Okay. So it's a good time to do like a little refresher on how injury settlements work. Injury settlements are basically like workman's comp, right? Craig James was injured while doing his job in Allen Park. And so because he was injured and because the Lions wanted to elected to release him with an injury, they are required to release him with an injury designation. So they're saying, we're releasing him, but he's currently injured, was injured at work. He goes to the waiver wire. Now, typically, those players go unclaimed, like 99.9% of the time, because another team doesn't want to take on an injured player. So when that player passes through waivers, because they were released with an injury designation, they revert back to the original team, in this case, the Lions, and they go immediately onto the Lions injured reserve. Now, the Lions, once he's back on their roster on injured reserve, the Lions have two options. They can either A, just keep him on injured reserve, but because he's been placed on injured reserve before the season, his season is over, and they can keep him on the roster, but they got to pay him his salary, and then they hold his contractual rights a year from now, but they got to pay him. The other option, and the more common option, is that they reach an injury settlement. And what that injury settlement is it means that Craig James gets released a second time, this time instead of an injury designation, it's an injury settlement. That means he's being paid like all of his workman's comp money up front. And then he's allowed to become a free agent and go look for other work. Now, that injury settlement is typically, it's the length of how long he's expected to be injured for times whatever his salary would be for a week. So they're trying to say, okay, if your injury is 8 weeks and you're making $1,000 a week, then we're going to pay you $8,000, right? Simple math, but it's more than that, but simple math. So they reach an injury settlement, they pay him, his workman's comp all up front. He becomes a free agent, and the Lions don't have to keep him on injured reserve and don't have to pay him his full salary. So that's the stage that they're going to get to. They're probably in that space right now, and that's most likely where he'll be headed. Unless he's like got a torn ACL and he's going to be done for the year, he's probably going to get an injury settlement. So when you hear players get released from now up until cutdown in that will be in September, you have to keep these details in mind. As you know, is a player just released outright? Are they subject to waivers? Are do they have an injury? Because all of those designations have different paths for what happens to the player. So I just wanted to touch on that before you know, just as a nice little refresher. And I think Craig James was probably at the bottom of the cornerbacks room anyways. He was for those who don't know, he was on the practice squad last year, but he wasn't in a very promising spot where he would where he was, you know, competing for a roster spot. He probably would have been competing for a practice squad spot. So injury is unfortunate for him, but hopefully gets compensated.
All right. So you talk about if they would keep, if, you know, when he reverts back to the Lions after nobody picks him up off waivers and he'd be put on injured reserve, would he get like all, if he was at making the league minimum, get all 800,000 then? Is that how that works?
Not
to this is going to be a complicated answer.
No, it's kind of like that. There's usually a clause that reduces that number in half, so that the Lions don't have to take a full $800,000 cap hit. It usually gets reduced to like 400,000. But if he has an injury that's going to keep him a year, you know, out a year, and it doesn't make sense for him to try and go, you know, be a free agent. But if he has an injury, like it's a hamstring injury, then yeah, he'll take some money and go look for another job. Could be beneficial for him. So it just really depends on the injury, the length of the injury, what the injury settlement might be. And, but there's usually clauses in those contracts where if they do end up on IR at this stage, it's at a reduced price.
All right. I'm nervous about asking this question now. If they get released with an injury settlement, how much money do they get?
Well, it could be, it just depends, right? Like it's, again, it's based on
their injury and their time it would take to come back from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like if he's expected to be out, like I said, a year, they may have to pay him like the full prorated salary, which could be upwards of like 400,000. Or if he's out for like 8 weeks, it could be like 10,000. Like it is a wide variance depending on what the injury is and, you know, how long he's expected to be out.
All right. It's not just a check for $100. He doesn't walk into Brad Holmes's office and get a check for $124.
No. It's a pretty fair amount.
All right. Let's talk about the rookies. We'll start right at the top. We're going to go through the draft picks first. Tarion Arnold, cornerback. He's participating and well, he participated in the OTAs and everything. He's going to be wearing number zero. You know, what are our expectations going to be for him this season?
So Tarion just signed his contract today, which was nice. That means the whole
signed up.
And it's ahead of schedule compared to last year. Last year, they didn't get their, didn't get Gibbs or Branch signed until July. So it was nice to see them get that done. One less thing to worry about. But expectations for Arnold, I think, are going to be high. Yes, the Lions, you know, it's a first round pick. And so expectations are that, you know, for most first round picks that you're going to be in a starting position. When you pick in the 20s, it's not necessarily, you know, I think the expectations diminish a little bit, right? For me, when you pick a guy at 24, like that's where Tarion was, I don't think he's necessarily guaranteed a starting spot or expected necessarily 100% going to start. And for the Lions, you know, they make everybody earn it. At the same time, Therrien's skill set combined with, his upside, I think put him in a position where he's should be slated to start. And then by the end of camp, we saw him starting a couple of times during OTAs and mini camp. He had some days that where he wasn't practicing, but the days that he was in the starting lineup pretty much from the jump. And when you look at Therrien as a player, I think he's most certainly expected to start. And even though, like I said, the draft position doesn't say he's going to, but I think him as a player alludes to that, right? Top cornerback on my board. He's got good quickness, good overall speed, even though I think he didn't test as well as he plays. Like he's gonna run. He runs a lot faster than his 40 time tells you. And I
That's what he
think,
said in the Detroit Free Press Day.
yeah, I think he said he was dealing with a hamstring or something like that right before the combine. So, Rakestraw had the same thing, right? Rakestraw had a groin injury, I think, before the combine as well. But for Arnold, I think you can expect him to start opposite of Carlton Davis. And the skill set, the demeanor, the attitude, and the fact that he probably should have went in the teens instead of 24, I think are all really good signs that he's going to come in and expected to be one of the starting outside corners. Now, he's going to face some competition. Amik Robertson, Emmanuel Mosley, those guys are going to push him. But I think at the end of the day, Arnold should be the guy who is expected to start. Now, I'm interested to see what you think about this. I'm not expecting him to be like cornerback one. I'm expecting him to be like I expect if they want to play matchup football, I expect Carlton Davis to be the guy that they put on like the opponent's top wide receiver. You agree with that, or you think Arnold's just going to get like baptism by fire here?
No, it'll be Carlton Davis will be the number one corner. I mean, we'll see. We'll see if Aaron Glenn's hands are tied again. They're gonna be playing loads of zone where there is no like matchup settings for the corners. They're gonna bring him along slowly. It's something that bugs some of the fans about this regime is they do bring players along slowly and don't throw too much at them. Because the first how many days there's going to be controversy those first few days of training camp because Arnold's going to be on the third team and everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's on the third team, like he's never going to play. This is a disaster of a draft pick, and we know that's part of their whole competition type thing. I would say he will emerge as the number two. They're giving Davis, cornerback one money. He makes more than Sutton made. Sutton was the number one corner last year. They're going to bring him along, so they're not going to put too much on his plate unless he's great, unless that Brian Branch type set. But even with Brian Branch, remember they were going to play him, use him a little at safety. It's like, nope, we're going to he's only going to play nickel. He's only going to handle these things. I think they're going to do the same thing with Arnold.
I first I think they're going to use more man this year than
I
zone.
hope so. That's the plan, but plans don't always work out.
Sure. And Aaron Glenn has changed his defense each of the 3 seasons he's been the defensive coordinator. So, but I think at his core, Aaron Glenn is a man scheme. He wants to run that
Everybody is.
man,
Everybody
that
wants
press
to
man.
rush press man. Yeah.
Sure. And I think that speaks to Carlton's strengths as well. I think he's a better press man, and I think Therrien's a better press man. And so those decisions, I think, were made purposefully to try and add those specific guys. Even Rakestraw is a really good press man. So I'm feeling pretty confident that they're going to come out in man, and they're going to start the season expecting to play more man. And I think that'll end up suiting Therrien well. At the same time, it is tough to be a rookie, a corner in the NFL, right? Like the learning curve is real sharp. The receivers that you're facing off against are pretty significant. Now, he did play in the SEC, so that's, he's got that going for him. But it's even in the SEC, you can be in a situation where you're going to be clearly better than the receiver opposite of you, except for only a couple of times. Tarion's going to be facing guys that are better than him as a rookie almost on a weekly basis. You know, there's a good chance of that. So there's going to be a lot to learn. Now, I do think Tarion has some Brian Branch in him. You know, that ability to progress, right? That ability, that upside. And I think he's learning quickly. So expectations are going to be high. I'm going to differ from you a little bit and say, I don't think he even starts as a reserve. I think he's going to start training camp with the starters. I think
no,
he's going
it's
to
not
surprise
happening.
People. Okay. All right. I'm going to, that's my guess. So
didn't
we'll
even
differ
Panay Sewell not open with the ones.
No. Panay did. Aiden did as well, but Aiden is a freak show.
Well, second overall, I mean, here's two right. top 10 picks. I don't know.
Sure.
Wasn't Jack Campbell buried on the depth chart going into
sure.
training
yeah.
camp? There's
I mean,
been
Gibbs,
a few of these situations
sure,
with this
yeah.
game.
Gibbs was not the starter. I mean, but that was basically like co-starter. Jack Campbell didn't start. Jameson Williams didn't start.
Well, but
he was suspended.
He was
I know,
injured.
But yeah. But
or recovering.
Yes, correct. But even when he was healthy, he wasn't necessarily pegged for given a starting spot. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to be honest, when it comes to Tarion, I see him more in line of a guy who should have went like 12, like, you know, like Gibbs, like J-Mo. And I think he's in the spot where he should start from the jump. That's, again, that's my gut feeling. That's I'm going to go with he starts training camp. You're going to say he starts as a reserve and then works his way up into a starter. But I think we both agree he ends up as a starter.
First 2 weeks playing in the NFL in the regular season. Week one's the Rams, right? Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. Week two, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. Like, those are some pretty tough matchups right from the get-go, regardless
Certainly.
If he's going to be lining up as the number one or the number two. So it'll be interesting to see. All right, the next, we're going to stick with the cornerback position, obviously. The vast majority of the people listening know where we're going next. Ennis Rakestra went in the second round, also a corner. Mm-hmm. What are the expectations on him coming into the training camp and into the regular season?
So I think Ennis is going to get cross-trained both outside and inside. And my guess is he's going to have a better opportunity to see the field as a nickel this year than as an outside corner. I think clawing his way up the ranks on the outside is going to be more challenging than on the inside. And some of that is because I'm expecting Brian Branch to split his time between nickel and safety. And then I'm expecting the Lions to lean on some of their cornerbacks to fill out some nickel snaps as well. So that means Ennis is going to have a chance to get on the field potentially as a like a corner nickel, like as a corner base nickel. And I think he's going to be competing with Amik Robertson for that. So it's not like Ennis is going to be, Ennis is a guy who is, I think, going to be probably third. He's going to be the guy who's like third string. Like, he's going to be third string on the outside. He's going to be the third nickel as well. Like, that's where he's going to start. He has the potential to climb up the charts for me. I think he can work his way into the two deep, but he's going to start in the three deep. And so that means he's going to have to either overtake Robertson or Mosley. He's going to have to surpass Vildor, who was, a starter at the end of last season, and Khalil Dorsey, who's had a really nice spring. But I think Rakestra has the talent to do that. I think there are guys, some of those guys are vulnerable to giving up a roster spot, or at least their spot on the depth chart to Rakestra. And he'll get his opportunities, but I don't think it's going to be as immediate of an impact as Arnold is. Like, I think Arnold's on the field ready to jump. Rakestraw's going to be more learn as you go, come along, and then, but I still think he's going to find the field. It's really interesting how they're going to use their nickel this year. Everything speaks to the fact that they don't want Brian Branch to ever leave the field. They want him on the field all the time. And in order to keep him on the field all the time, he's going to have to learn to play safety, like not just slot, but like safety as well. And so how much time will he be spending at safety versus the slot will be interesting because the fallout from that will directly affect Rakestraw. Rakestraw is he has a lot of what they really like. He's again he's so much he's a very much like Arnold in so many different ways. Like they're both very strong tacklers, they're both aggressive, they both like press man, they both are physical, they both want to hit you and let you know that it was them that hit you. They're both good at staying in phase. They both ran 40s that weren't as good as what I think their play speed is. The problem or the difference is that Arnold's just a little bit better in a lot of those areas, and he's got a higher upside, which is why Arnold goes in the first round and Rakestraw goes in the second. But Rakestraw is no slouch, and he's exactly what they're looking for in a corner. And so I think they're going to try and find ways to get him on the field. So if there's situations where you're playing a opponent and that opponent has a slot receiver that maybe doesn't match up with Brian Branch as well, Brian Branch may spend more time at safety that game, and you may turn to Robertson or Rakestraw and say, "All right, one of you guys is going to be covering, the receiver for 50 snaps this or 50% of the snaps this game." Or we want to use we're going to have some dime packages where Rakestraw comes in as one of the slots. And I think he's going to get his opportunities, but it's not going to be as significant as I think some of the other second rounders have been in the past. Or I think as much as some second rounders, what people's expectations are for a second rounder, right? I think he's going to get somewhere in between like the 25 to, around 25 to 30% of like the defensive snaps, which would be good. That would be a good amount for him. But tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. I'm second guessing what I thought because where I go is to two different players. First is Jack Campbell from last year, whose playing time like really increased as the season went along. The guy I
Sure.
was really thinking about, and not because of his caliber of a player. I'm not saying that he is Darius Slay, but here's an example of a guy back in 2013, the Lions drafted in the second round, albeit a lot earlier than Rakestraw was 61st pick, and I think Slay was 36th, right? Slay
Yes.
didn't start until the last few games of the season. That was on a 7-9 team, and maybe Rakestraw is not going to be, good enough to be to be in that same situation. But that's kind of the way I was thinking about it today and in the last couple of days, and after we discussed like what we were going to talk about today. But I don't know, I probably lean more towards you, and I got to watch what I say because starting really doesn't mean much, but
Sure.
the idea of starting means you're probably playing a lot of snaps, and maybe he would, and he could end up in that situation anyway due to injuries. We'll
Sure.
see.
Absolutely.
But I
Look
don't know.
at.
I'm sitting more in your camp now. But I, if the best case scenario, I would love to say best case scenario is he comes in and he like works his way into, being in the starting lineup by the end of the year, being a guy who's going to get a over 50% of the snaps, and that would be great.
Well, look at the cornerback room last year, right? Like you're expecting Mosley to come in and compete, and he tears his ACL, and or he has a delay, then he comes back and he tears his ACL. Jerry Jacobs ends up going to the starting lineup, and then he gets benched because of his play. They give Dorsey a shot to start, and then he gets benched, and then they end up leaning back on Vildor, who was a guy who wasn't even on the roster midway through the season, and so. It's very easy for injuries to all of a sudden open up opportunities where you're relying on a guy.
Especially at that position, more so than
Right.
probably any other position on the team.
Right. But I think the nice thing is now is we always talk about the fact that there's certain positions where you need three starting capable players. And right now, I think they have at least three starting capable outside corners, and they arguably could have like four, maybe even five, if you know, depending on where Mosley is, depending on how they want to use Robertson. And so for me, I think they're in a good spot, and I think that's going to make, as far as depth, like they have the bodies to compete. Will they all work out? You know, probably not. Will they all stay healthy? Well, probably not. But if they stay healthy and if they compete the way that we think they can, Rakestraw's got a hard road. He's got a hard road to climb. But injuries happen, players don't perform, and all of a sudden Rakestraw could be in a spot where he's cornerback three instead of cornerback five. And but right now, knowing, you know, or not knowing what we don't know or what's coming, I think he's in a spot where he's going to get some opportunities, but it's not going to be as consistent as you might hope out of a second rounder. But look, I mean, look at the Lions' past second round picks, like, you know, Josh Pascal, Levi Onwuzurike, like those are guys that didn't get huge roles early either. We're spoiled by last year's second round picks of Brian Branch and Sam Laporta, but
Right.
like the second round picks prior to them, they weren't getting huge opportunities, and I think that more lines up with what we're seeing with Rakestraw here.
All right. Moving on to the fourth round. Lions take Giovanni Manu from the University of British Columbia, offensive lineman, offensive tackle. Who knows? Maybe becomes a guard. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's going to have a hard time seeing the field. Unless he makes some incredible leaps, I think he is on the Broderick Martin path, which means he's probably going to be inactive more games than he's not. The opportunity for him is, or this his ceiling is what got him drafted so high, right? But he doesn't appear to be pro ready, and he's got a curve. At the same time, offensive line is another position where players get injured very easily. They get rolled up on all the time. They get, you know, there's a whole variety of ways for offensive linemen to get hurt because the trenches are a brutal place. If they keep the players that we think they're going to keep, I think Manu is probably not going to, he may not play an NFL snap. He
But
might
he
be
has to be
inactive.
on the 53-man roster, right? They'll lose him
Correct.
if they have him on
Correct.
the practice squad.
They absolutely have to keep him under 53, but he could be a weekly inactive, a weekly healthy scratch. They did that with Stephen Gilmore last season. He played three games and was a healthy scratch pretty much the rest of the way. Broderick Martin was a healthy scratch a lot. Like, so they've done this with rookies in the past. This is the method I expect. Could Manu, if he catches on quick, could he work his way up? Sure. But my expectations are very low, and I'm looking at him as a long-term project. I have no idea how many offensive linemen they're going to keep. Last year, they kept eight, I think, to start. Might have been nine. I could see them keeping 10 offensive linemen this year.
Oh, wow. I
That's a lot. It's way more than you need, and ideally you would keep nine. But I'm going to have a hard time seeing them move on. Maybe nine. Okay, I've got nine in my head that I absolutely think those nine are almost locked for me. Will they keep a 10th? I don't know. But I could see them. I absolutely think they're going to keep at least nine. And Manu is probably going to be that ninth guy or that
Is
last tier.
Christian Mahogany between 6 and 8?
Well, we're going to get there. But
Okay. Oh, that's right. We're gonna talk about it. Never mind.
I mean, I'll spoil it. I'll say yeah, but
No, you shouldn't have spoiled it.
I'll tell you why in a
Now
minute.
everybody's tuning out. They just shut it
No,
off.
I'll tell you why in a minute.
All right.
But Manu, look, I think Manu's upside is like he has a freakish body that he just needs to learn, you know, technique, patience, timing. There's a whole variety of things, but the upside is really what's appealing about him. He's probably going to be on the third string all throughout camp, right? I mean, like
Right.
almost the whole way.
Yeah,
If
it's
not,
all
I
going to
mean,
be developmental. They're just going to be showing them the ropes.
yep, he'll get sprinkled into the second team At different points, because they're going to want to give him a look at higher level competition, second string competition instead of third. But he's going to be swimming all of training camp, and that's fine. Like that, when you drafted him, this is what you expected. You expected him to be trying to keep his head above water, and that's where he's at. But he's a massive upside guy, and so you're going to do your best to develop him. And but if he may not play a snap this whole year.
I would agree. I don't think he'll end up playing a snap this year. They're just going to be developing him the whole year through. Next, six picks later, Lions take Sione Vaki, also in the fourth round from Utah. He was a safety, also played yep. running back for the Utes. We only see him as a grit back.
I think he's a guy who's going to have a couple of different roles. One of them is going to be running back. I think at worst, he's your fifth running back. At best, he could be your third. Like, he has that kind of potential. In OTAs, he hit on a couple of big plays. He showed some promise, impressed a lot of the people that got a chance to watch him participate. I expect that to continue. I expect him to just continue to learn and develop and just bank reps and bank familiarity with what they're expecting out of him. And he's a guy that I expect to have some specific plays put in place for him. And then I expect him to be the start in all four phases of special teams as well. So Baki's going to spend most of his rookie year on special teams, but I do think he's going to see some offensive looks. Just because, again, he's a fun guy with some upside, and he brings some uniqueness that, that is a little bit different than what they have. You know, we didn't really talk about him much at the after the draft, but one of the things you and I like to talk about is how much tread he has on running backs have on their tires, right? Like, how many snaps did they have? Do you know what his total snaps were?
Yeah, I have the numbers right here, but I think you already have it on top of your head. Go ahead.
66. 66 okay. Offensive snaps or offensive touches. It's a pretty low number.
In 4 years at Utah.
The hard part is with him is there's a lot of wear and tear as a safety.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's another wear and tear. Yeah.
So you can't really just do the touches with him and be like, oh, he's got a lot of tread on his tire, on his tires. But he was a 2 year starting safety there, so he took his bangs there, but. He's an interesting guy. And I tell you, the coaching staff in the front office are just in love with him. You listen to Brad Holmes talk about him, talk about when going to Vaki's pro day and watching him do full workouts for safety, full workouts for receiver, and full workouts for a running back, and then another full workout for special teams. He was like, he essentially did four pro days.
That's more wear and tear right there.
but I think he has the frame, the body, the mentality to handle that, right? So it's going to be really interesting with Vaki. I do think he's going to have some offensive opportunities, though. But when you think about how much, you got to think, one, can he jump Craig James? Craig Reynolds. Thank you. Craig James was on my mind from earlier. Yep. Can he jump Craig Reynolds? If he can't, then we're talking about, a handful of snaps. But if he can jump Reynolds, there's going to be a lot more opportunities there. It's a big task. He's also going to have to beat out Zonovan Knight, which I think he's a really good player as well and had a role last year. But I think he's going to fit into, if I had to guess, I'm going to say he's going to be right in between that running back three, running back four role. I think he's going to start out as five. I expect him to jump up at least one or two spots.
Interesting thing about Vaki is that, you know, even though he's the fourth player the Lions took, he probably has the second most clear role among the draftees, right? Like, he is, you know, man who's not going to play a snap. Brake Straw is going to be buried on the depth chart. He's probably not going to get a lot of snaps. I mean, and Vaki's probably going to get less snaps than Brake Straw, but it's like, but Vaki, he knows he's going to be on all four special teams units, you know, and they're, like you mentioned, they're going to have plays for him in the offense. Like he's going to be, you know, he's already got his first year all laid out for him. And interesting for him, you know, I don't know if his talent's going to limit him, right? He was a fourth round pick and all that, but he is a top tier grit guy. Like, what are in his head, like, what are his long-term plans as an NFL player? And I don't know, does Holmes and everybody else kind of see like, well, maybe he can even do more than, you know, what we're asking him. But he'll be a real interesting guy to watch coming.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm in the boat with you. We're going to see him a lot on special teams and a little bit here and there.
I think that's a great point. You know, he was a slot receiver in high school. And so if he's got that ability to be running back three, but also maybe a reserve slot and just give them more options, then you can put two running. If you want to put two running backs on the field, he can be that running back. And then if you split him out in the slot, then great. You know, I mean, they want to do that with Gibbs more, but you know, think about if you send out a personnel group that features Sam Laporta, Brock Wright, Vaki, and Jahmyr Gibbs, and then Amon-Ra St. Brown as your fifth skill player. Well, the defense is going to counter with just a base formation. And then if you spread those guys out, you know, because you can Sam Laporta and Brock Wright can be spread out, and then you can put Vaki and get, like, you can go empty and then put all five of them out there as receivers against base, against a defense's base. You're going to get matchups that you like, right? Like, they're going to have to shift their corners in, but that's a tough matchup out of a base to try and get those guys. And they have those kind of weapons. You know, granted, all five of those guys are probably best as like slot type receivers, but still, my point stands. Like, they're going to be tough to match up with if a defense is expecting them to be runners and they come out as receivers. And I think Vaki can do that. I'm also interested to see if they want to use Vaki, or, you know, to what lengths they want to use him. Like, what kind of blocking chops does he have? Because if he has really good blocking chops, you can use him more in third down situations, right? Like, I want to, it's going to be really interesting to see where he's at from a developmental standpoint, or where he's at the end of training camp anyway.
You know, one of the Lions, you know, quote unquote weaknesses is depth at wide receiver outside of Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams. You know, with losing Josh Reynolds to the Broncos in the offseason. And I don't know if it's that big of a deal. I'm not crazy about this being that big of a deal. You mentioned Vaki, like, and you mentioned, you know, personnel groupings and all that. When you look at Josh Reynolds, had 40 receptions last year, played in all 17 games. You know, that's not even 2.5 catches a game. That's what you got to replace in him a game. Now this is kind of more of a, turns into a baseball discussion, but for the baseball theory behind, you know, replacing statistical output or whatever, or output from players. But guessing this is what Ben Johnson's working on right now is like, well, we've lost this guy, but there's 40 catches. You could see it being spread around between all sorts of the other guys on the roster. I don't know, when you talk about Vaki, like, he's going to chip in 5 catches, maybe 10 catches, you know, and there's 10 of the 40, you know, like, you're going to get 5 more receptions out of Khalif Raymond. You can get it all to add up.
Well, I don't know.
It doesn't seem as bad as it looks on paper. When you stare at this depth chart, it's like Antoine Green starting X receiver. Like, oh no.
Well, I think, you know, even if Green gets 20 of those 40, and Vaki gets 5 and Jahmyr gets 15, away you go. You know what I mean? You've already made that up, right? So who plays the X is going to be very interesting. Because they have a lot of slot options, and I'm interested to see where that goes.
I'm the one wandering us off topic.
No, that's
Discuss
okay.
that. All right. Moving on to the next draft pick, sixth rounder, Mekhi Wingo, defensive tackle from LSU. Now, I don't even know what to expect out of him because all of our defensive tackles in the last couple of drafts, like outside of Aleem McNeil, they've all spent some time on the bench
Sure.
trying to develop or hurt one or the other.
So the way I kind of view defensive tackle is Reeder and McNeil are kind of locked in, and then we're starting to see some progress from Levi Onwuzurike, which is very encouraging. Broderick is still coming along, but after him, it's kind of open, or even after Levi, it's kind of open. Last year's UDFA Chris Smith seems to be getting a lot of opportunities, but the opportunity for Wingo is going to be there. Now, if Levi comes on like they're thinking, it's going to be a little bit harder for Wingo, but Wingo has inside outside flexibility. I think he's another guy who's going to make the roster. But there's probably going to be times when he's a healthy scratch, and there's probably going to be times when he's defensive tackle three or four. Depending on their opponent. So for me, the upside's there with Wingo, the work ethic's there with Wingo, and he can be like a specialty type defensive lineman, but will he be like in the primary rotation? I think that's hard to say. And probably, and I, if I was going to say, have to decide one way or another, I would say probably not in this, in like the heavy rotation. So but again, there's still a path for him. There's still going to be opportunities for him to get onto the field. It's just going to be a little bit more challenging, and I think more situational, depending on who, you know, what they're trying to get out of him. At the same time, the bit one, arguably one of the biggest weaknesses from the front seven last year was their ability to get interior pressure, and that's something that he excels at. So even if he's a one-trick pony, if he's really good at that one trick, he's going to get opportunities. I'm not saying he's James Houston per se, but the type of James Houston got on the field as a rookie because he was really good at that one skill. Well, same thing can be true with Wingo. If he's really good at getting interior pressure, they're going to give him opportunities to show that, and they're going to give him opportunities to put that on display. So I'm going to say my expectations for him are defensive tackle four or five, not part of the regular rotation, more of a specialist, but the opportunity to get snaps if he can show he's really good at giving that interior penetration.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, who knows how Levi's back's going to hold up. Even
Sure.
though they'd say he's looking great and he's in the best shape ever, he's saying all the right things. So we'll see. Hopefully he is, because it'll only make the defensive line better for it. But I'm in the same boat as you when it comes to Wingo. All right. Last of the draft picks, also in the
Yes.
sixth round, Christian Mahogany, pick 210, offensive lineman from Boston College. And you have him as one of the nine offensive linemen advancing
Yes.
to the final 53-man roster at this moment.
They started moving Colby Sorensdahl back out to right tackle. They did this with the, and then they were able to land Mahogany. Now, Mahogany's, that makes his path to the roster a lot better, a lot easier, right? Now he's going to have to beat out Nitane Moody, Mutai, right? Or mispronouncing that, but Nitane is a, he's a good, he's a veteran player who's had some start, or not, I don't remember if it's starting or just consistent snaps, but he's a guy who's been around for a while. But Mahogany's upside is really there. Like he's a guy who really most people thought should have went higher, third, fourth round grade. He ends up going in the sixth. Upside's there. He has starting potential, in my opinion. Not right now, but down the road, I think he can be a starter. He's really good at being a bully. He's really good at that gap power scheme. He was one of a handful of guys that we had tabbed in the draft as a guy who we thought could be a guy who challenges, down the road for a starting job. And with Sorsdahl moved back to tackle, it just creates a clearer path. I think at the end of training camp, Mahogany will have jumped into that second spot at right guard behind Kevin Zeitler, and Mahogany will probably be his backup. Now, Coyote Aushika, Kobe Sorsdahl, like I said, has some experience at guard. Aushika is a guy they've liked for a while. Can he beat those guys out for to be the primary backup guard? We're gonna see. We're gonna see. That's what, how training camp goes. But I think he's gonna be one of the nine. I think even if he's not playing at that level at the end of training camp, I think the upside's there. And my guess is he is playing at that level by the end of training camp. So I'm going with yes, he's part of the nine, and I would not be at all surprised if he is the primary reserve at guard when the regular season starts.
Interesting. So you have a Coyote Aushika as the guy on the outside looking in, right? It's your Decker, Glasgow, Ragnow, Zeitler, Sewell. There's their starting five. Dan Skipper, Mahogany, Sorsdahl, Manu. That's nine.
Yeah.
All
And
right.
Aushik is 10 for me. Now I
Okay.
know they like him. And
Yeah, no, obviously. And he's played meaningful snaps in a lot of
And
games.
it's very possible that Mahogany isn't ready by the end of training camp and Aushik is, and that's why Aushik makes the roster. But
And
I
that's
don't
maybe
think
why you feel there could be 10 offensive linemen on the 53-man
exactly.
roster.
Exactly. Because you're not moving on from Manu. Dan Skipper has become this cult hero.
But they can get rid of Dan Skipper and get
They
him back as people get hurt.
100% they
So I
can.
wouldn't be surprised if they end up cutting him at some poor Dan Skipper.
I think Dan Skipper is more vulnerable than Mahogany.
Well,
If
yeah, well,
that
because he's a
that
draft
tells you
pick.
where I'm at, man.
Right.
So that's our drafted guys, but I think we should just at least explore the undrafted guys just to see who's out there. For those who aren't familiar with the undrafted guys, well, let's take a look at the undrafted ones and what their chances are so that you can, if you're going to training camp in the fall, you get a chance to know who to
All
look
right, so
for.
we're going to go in order of guaranteed money. At the top of the list
Okay.
is center Kingsley Egwuokun.
Now they have three centers that they've been utilizing all three of them at center and guard throughout OTA. So they're cross
Can we
training them. If you want, you want to talk about all
band
three?
them all? All
Sure.
right,
Because
Kingsley
they're all
Egwuokun, Duke Clemens, Brian Hudson.
and if I'm not mistaken, those three are all in the top five when it comes to money. Right, the
Right.
guaranteed
Yep.
money. Okay, so let's all three of those guys are guys that they thought highly enough of to give them top five money in their UDFA class. Kingsley is the guy who got the most and would seem to be the one that most, that the expectations would be okay, he's probably going to get the most opportunities. But it's actually Ben, let me double check my note here to be sure, which I'm not talking out of order. It's actually been Brian Hudson who's been getting a little bit more attention. Now, it's just OTAs and there's no contact, right? And there's no pads. And
Right.
so it doesn't really tell us a whole lot right now. But I think when the pads come on, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. Now, the reason they brought in three centers is I think because they're looking for a long-term solution on the practice squad and potentially as a backup to Frank Ragnow. Now, as we just talked about with the maybe them keeping 10 offensive linemen, they're not going to keep an 11th, right? They're not going to keep Kingsley or Hudson or Clemens just because, you know, they want to keep a reserve center. Like these three guys are probably fighting for a spot on the practice squad. They're
Just one
probably
spot on the practice squad or
maybe
two?
two. Like if you're flexible to play both center and guard, absolutely two of them could make it. Maybe even all three, you know, I mean, it just depends, right? But I'm viewing these three guys as they don't want to work Frank too much during from a practice standpoint during the season. They're going to need another body that can play center. And so let's find that guy and then give that guy an opportunity to make the practice squad, develop, learn, and then maybe have a chance to make the roster a year from now, as they've developed and grown, and maybe they can get developed into like a long-term position on the team. It's going to be super hard for them to, for any of these three to even make the roster, much less get any meaningful snaps this year. They'd have to, one of them would have to play out of their mind to jump the guys ahead of them. But I absolutely think one of them or two of them are going to be on the practice squad, as part of a weekly practice, role to help keep Frank healthy and keep the team rolling, but also with the long-term option of being something more. So I don't think any of them make it. I think they have a good chance though to still stick around.
Interesting. All big school guys, right? Agu-Akun's
Yeah.
from went to Florida. Clemens went to UCLA, and Brian Hudson, I think, went to Louisville, right? He bounced around a couple of colleges. All of them very experienced guys. So it's interesting that's the route they went. But maybe they make a good point. Maybe they're looking to develop one of these guys into being kind of a long-term backup for the team. All right. Next up. Second biggest total guaranteed money. A guy you were kind of excited about when they picked him up as a UDFA, wide receiver Isaiah Williams.
So Williams is probably a slot only. He has some big play potential. He was a he produced very well at Illinois, and
Two-time kid.
yep, that certainly helps. He's got experience on special teams as well as, like I said, on offense in the slot, and he's kind of a gadget guy. Again, I think the path for him is going to be very difficult because of the fact that he's probably a slot. And this team has a ton of slot options. Not only do you have Amon-Ra St. Brown and you have Khalif Raymond, who can also play the slot, but you're going to have to beat out Tom Kennedy, who's been with the team for the last 2 decades. And he's not going to play the X, which is really where I think the most open competition is. So Williams is in a tough spot, but if you can prove yourself as a gadget guy, there's opportunities. If you can prove yourself on special teams, there's opportunities. And he got big money for a reason. They're not just going to throw money at the guy so that he can come in to be a slot receiver on, you know, during training camp and maybe stick around on the practice squad. They threw a bunch of money at him, the second most money, because they think he has a shot to try and work his way in. It's a tough road, but the opportunity will be there. And like we always talk about, money, the money speaks here, right? And they threw, let me get the right number, they threw $225,000 at him. Like, that's not back-breaking money, but that's a still a significant amount of money considering the player number three on this list was Steel Chambers, who only had 75,000. So you gave him quite a bit more. You gave Isaiah Williams quite a bit more to come to this team, and he's going to get the opportunity to challenge for a job. Look, the position hurts, the depth it's in the slot hurts, but he's a unique player, and he has some that gadget ability and that special teams ability will give him a shot.
All right, next up, another wide receiver, Jalen Calhoun from Duke. Played, five full seasons, 60 career college games, 253 receptions in that time.
They broke most of Duke's records.
Wow, if you play 60 games, five full seasons, you're going to break a lot of records.
Yeah. I have him listed as a slot because that's where I think he ends up. He played outside as well at Duke. I think it's a little harder. If he is outside here in the NFL, it's probably going to be more at the Z than the X, which again makes that path to the roster very challenging. The X is where the spots are. And that puts him like right in competition, direct competition with Khalif Raymond, who is arguably, one of the better wide receiver fours in the league. Khalif is excellent. Khalif's had a good camp. Khalif's a hard worker. At the same time, Khalif is going to back up Jameson Williams. He's going to back up Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's probably going to back up whoever wins the X role. And maybe, I don't think he's going to, Khalif's not going to be your X. He's going to get his snaps. He's going to get his opportunities. He's going to play on special teams. He's going to be your punt returner. Khalif's going to get a ton of work. That's who Calhoun has to try and beat. And that's going to be a tough, tough road, especially considering the skill set, the experience, the speed that Khalif has. I don't see, we've seen a lot of guys come in and challenge Khalif in the past, and it hasn't taken long for Khalif to kind of put them in their place. And so that's the Calhoun has his work cut out for him. I think he has a hard road.
All right. Next up, Morris Norris, Fresno State defensive back.
So Morris is, or Norris is a unique guy because he's been getting a lot of love in training camp. Played mostly in the slot. The Lions have used him in the slot. They've used him on the outside, and they're planning on using him at safety as well. Now, how exactly they're going to use him and where he's going to find his role is going to be interesting, but it's interesting when you look at how they get split up, how the rosters get split up and where the opportunities come. He was one of the rare guys, one of the rare UDFAs that was getting work with the top team. And he was a guy that was getting opportunities in the two deep rotation with the starters by the end of OTAs. It'll be very interesting to see what he can do. Because right now it's him getting rewarded for working hard and producing on the field. But it's a tough path for him because, as we talked about, they basically redid the entire secondary. But the Lions are not going to turn away good corners. And if he shows that he has the skills to stick, he could be this year's Stephen Gilmore. He could be this year's guy who makes the roster because he has a good training camp and a good preseason. And then he'll just be sitting, he could be sitting there waiting in the wings looking for an opportunity. And if that opportunity comes, as we talked about earlier, players get injured, we'll see what happens. But right now, Norris, of the UDFAs, Norris is the guy who probably put himself in the best position coming out of OTAs to be in a spot to be in a position to earn himself a roster spot. So Norris is the name is a name to keep in mind. He is a guy who has a legitimate shot to sneak in as one of the back, one of the last corners.
Really?
Yeah, I
I
know. I
would
was
be pretty
surprised too.
shocked. Well,
I would too. But at the same
but
time, we see these UDFA corners come
no,
out
you're
of the
right.
woodwork all the time, right?
Khalil Dorsey.
Like,
Jerry
J.R.
Jacobs.
Jacobs, right? Yeah. It happens. So,
Yeah, you opened my eyes there. All right, next up, Isaac Ukwu, from Ole Miss, a defensive end.
yeah, much tougher, right? There, that's these are guys who, we're gonna get to Ukwu, and then the other one's Nate Lynn. We're gonna get to him in a second as well. Much harder pass for them because of the guys that are ahead of them. On the depth chart, the thing that they have working for them is that the Lions use multiple styles of defensive end. And so will they be one of those guys that can kind of jump? Like right now, I would say Uku is like fourth or fifth string, right, amongst the defensive ends. At the same time, if he ends up being like closer to a Sam as opposed to like a down defensive end, that opportunity for him could be better because those players, you know, maybe the Lions haven't, you know, solidified who they the guys they have in competition. And if they're like, okay, these four guys are going to be competing, well, now all of a sudden he's like third or fourth instead of fourth or fifth. And so couple breaks and he could get a chance to move up. I think he has a shot to be like in a Sam role, like he can be an edge Sam type of guy. But he's got Matthew Betts, the Canadian, he played Canadian
CFL Sackmaster.
Thank you. Mitchell Agud from who they signed last year, and then James Houston, all are going to be ahead of them. So it's a tough tough road for Isaac.
All right, so you mentioned Nate Lynn already. Let's go straight to Nate Lynn, and then we could group the two safeties together. Nate Lynn, edge defender, former teammate of Colby Sorsdahl at William and Mary.
Yes. Yep.
And maybe he gave him a good review, a glowing review.
They also went to his pro day, and they met with him at his pro day as well. Then they brought him in for a top 30
visit.
There's
a William and Mary pro day?
I think he was,
or was he
I think they get blended into something, right?
Well, yeah, or they'd be at Virginia Tech, or I don't even know what William and Mary is close to.
I'm not sure. But they brought him in for a top 30 visit as well, because they wanted to get some medicals on him, get a closer look, and have a talk with him. He's more of a down guy, even though he's a little bit lighter than Ukwu. He's still considered more of like a down guy. Like he tends to win more, but he's lighter. He's like 250 pounds as opposed to like 260. And so could that be an opportunity for him to be more of a Sam guy? It'd be interesting to see where will they give him reps? Where will they give him opportunities? Obviously, like I said, a guy that they thought enough to use one of their top 30 visits on. But you know, again, he has the same obstacles that we just talked about. He's got a lot of other edge defenders that are ahead of him, guys that are fighting for jobs, fighting for ends of the rosters, just like him. And he's going to have to weed through a lot of that to get an opportunity.
William and Mary is closer to Charlottesville than to Blacksburg. So maybe it's University of Virginia. I don't know. Maybe it's Maryland. I don't know. Probably useless information. It's nothing we any. Neither you nor I nor anybody listening needs to know. All right, the safeties first. Yes. Chell and Garnes.
Let's just pair them together. The other
right,
one's
Chell and Garnes
and Lauren Strickland. I got you, Lauren Strickland. Both guys are kind of big hitter box type safeties. They're guys that fit more of the Melifonwu type role as opposed to the Kirby Joseph. They're actually maybe more Brian Branch than Kirby Joseph. Tough pass. Mostly because one, Brandon Joseph, who was a UDFA last year, has had a really nice spring, and he was really showing out. They re-signed CJ Moore, and they're planning on using Brian Branch at safety and maybe using Norris at safety as well. All six, that puts them like third and on the third or fourth string, depending on like if Branch and Norris are going to be in the rotation at safety as well. That's a much harder road. We think of safety as being like one of the weaker spots on the roster and maybe needing like more veteran help. But if Brian Branch is going to be playing at safety, Kirby's playing at safety, if he's playing at safety, and then that's three really good options. And then if Joseph shows out, well, now that's four. And if CJ Moore does well and becomes a dynamic special teamer again, that he could be five. And it makes things a lot harder. I don't think Strickland or Garnes didn't really show out so much at camp. So I'm looking at them saying, they're really going to have to do something to catch my eye because their names didn't pop a lot. And while some of the other players ahead of them, their names were popping. And so tough roads for both those safeties.
Has Tracy Walker signed anywhere?
No, not yet. But there's a handful of safeties that haven't yet. Tracy hasn't
Oh,
signed
that's
yet.
true. Yep.
Yeah, Quandre Diggs hasn't signed yet. I believe Justin Simmons is still out there. So there's a handful of safeties that I expect to get signed either right ahead of training camp or maybe during training camp. The Lions are, I don't know if they are necessarily, if they've positioned them in the positioned themselves in a spot where they need it. Maybe if they aren't as high on Brandon Joseph as it appears, then they'll go after one at the same time. I think they're comfortable with Brandon Joseph and CJ Moore competing for safety four. And I don't know. For me, you've got the money. I'd love to see Quandre at the same time. I don't think any of those veterans are going to be itching to come here if they know that the coaching staff is going to be leaning on Branch, Kirby, and Iffy as their primary three guys. So could be a combination of trying tough to try and bring a veteran in at the same time, and then Lions not needing one at the same time. If they added one, I think I'd probably be okay with that.
All right, next up, linebacker Deron Gilbert from Northern Illinois.
Yeah, so when they signed Neiman, I was expecting Gilbert to be the guy that got cut because I expected, okay, one linebacker in, one linebacker out. I was a bit surprised it was Steel Chambers and not Gilbert. Didn't really hear a whole lot of Gilbert's name. Most people watching them at training camp, or I'm sorry, at OTAs and mini camp, sided with the fact that Steel Chambers was the one that looked a little better and was in a better spot. So, but Gilbert stuck around. And so I don't know why. I'm interested to find out why. And it could be one of these spots where he's, it'll take me seeing him in camp before I figure it out. For now, though, you have to give him credit for sticking around, especially through that first cut. And if they do keep six linebackers, like we talked about when we're talking about Steel Chambers at the top, then he's right now he could be in a position to be that linebacker six. So another name to keep an eye on because the opportunity's there. I haven't heard much about how he's done.
Next up, kicker James Turner, University of Michigan, and 4 years at Louisville before that, hitting on 80% of his field goals throughout his career, nearly all of his extra points. He's got a lot of experience playing in big games, and so far, so good through mini camp and OTAs.
Yeah, big leg, and the accuracy has been there. Badgley has done well, and he's shown, his leg has improved as well, but the accuracy has not been as sharp as Turner so far. So Badgley has the NFL experience and the trust of the coaching staff. At the same time, Turner seemed to have the better performance through spring. Thing is with this kicking competition is Dave Phipp, the Lions special teams coordinator, he takes the entire collective offseason into account. It's not just who has the hot foot or who's doing well now or who's the better kickoff. He takes all of everything that you did in OTAs, mini camp, training camp, preseason, all of it comes into a factor when deciding which kicker has the job. So first leg of this race seems to have gone to Turner, but Badgley was probably the favorite heading into camp, spring camp. So it could be a tighter competition than we think. It'll also be interesting to see if they add another kicker to the mix. There's talks of that potentially. The whole Jake Bates thing. He came in to visit the team earlier this week. So it'd be interesting if all of a sudden he gets thrown into the mix as well. But the one notable difference here is that both Badgley and Turner seem to have bigger legs than what the Lions have had in previous years, at least last couple previous years.
All right. Kicker from the Michigan Panthers, Jake Bates. No, that hasn't happened yet. He's trying out with the team.
It might. I mean, it
I don't know
might.
why we're still excited about the guy, but you know,
No, I
let's
know.
see what happens.
It'd be interesting, but like I said, people are Turner seems to be have people's attention. So that's a good thing.
Finally, long snapper Hogan Hatton, University of Idaho. Do you have any information on this guy?
Nope. Long snappers do not get any attention during OTAs or mini camp. So there's really nothing. He's not a guy that we scouted. We don't know.
Interesting. All right. So I did my own scouting in the last 14 seconds here while you were talking about James Turner. 2023 Phil Steele preseason All-American long snapper. Three tackles on punt coverage last season, 2023. Mm. Now, before that, in the years leading up to his preseason All-American long snapper season, high school, he played on both sides of the ball, helped lead his team to a state championship in Arizona as a freshman, sophomore, and junior. Now, he had two sophomore seasons because they played in the spring and they played in the fall, you know, after the COVID. Played linebacker. And tallied a bunch of tackles, played on all sorts of different special teams as well. He blocked a punt against Drake in 2022. And so interesting. He's got some chops of playing football, not just snapping the ball between his legs, which I don't know, all these guys probably do. But that's probably all we'll talk about Hogan Hatton this season. That's probably.
Well, look, I'll get my eyes on him snapping at some point. It might not be the first couple of practices, but of training camp, but we'll get a gander at him and see what he's got.
Do we want to touch on anything else? We have gone through the whole UDFA list. We talked about all the draft picks.
No, I think we touched on a lot. I think we've covered what we wanted to cover, hopefully in as much detail as we wanted to cover. And we talked about a lot of players. And so hopefully that gives the fan base a nice
base
a nice set of background things to keep in mind when they head into when training camp kicks off. And you know, if you, like I said, they'll open them to the public, and when public gets in there, hopefully a couple of these names jump out at you to keep your eye on.
All right, let's go to the reviews. And let me tell you, Eric, I take a beating in these over the last couple of weeks.
I don't think people like, I think there, we have so many new members to our audience that I don't think people like who are getting their first taste of Joe really understand like the sense of humor that you were bringing. I just think you came
you
up
don't
with
have
a
to protect my poor performance, Eric.
No. I don't think it was a poor performance. I was offended. But I think people are overreacting, because whatever, like,
well, it's true. They may not be representative of the whole,
the whole cult thing that you were like, you were trying to create a new angle on something that so many other people have talked about, and I thought it was creative and unique.
It's concerning when everybody's wearing the same shirt. It's just me. I'm probably not right. That's just how I feel.
But
I know
thought,
they did it on purpose.
I thought it was unique. It was a unique perspective because look, it's not like you're the only person to criticize a potential groupthink amongst a front office. And I think people got a little too sensitive about it, but whatever. People are entitled to their own opinion. I was offended for you. Even if you were not, I didn't like it, but whatever, that's fine. I'm still offended that we got a one star for my,
let's go through, we got some good ones
of Polite, from like a few years ago when I
didn't. Oh yeah. That one. Yeah. That was a misunderstanding.
But that was my
I can
fault.
Understand their perspective.
Yeah.
You
oh
know,
no.
Like, I guess they could take it that way. I think you.
I meant, spoke out of turn.
Obviously,
was,
you didn't mean what he
correct.
Thought or whoever thought you he
correct.
Meant. But
that was my error. But I'm still offended. I was still offended. Yeah. But.
Lynn Zab, May 30th, 5 stars, hands down the best Lions coverage for any diehard fan. Keep up the great work, fellas. All right. Cham 8207, one star, not enough content. So that came on June 3rd. So
wait, okay,
we
okay,
took we
listen.
Took that advice, Eric. We waited another 10 days and we put out some content.
You know what? I get that you want more content. I get it. Okay. And I'm not even offended by that, because I'm not even offended that I had a personal family thing that I had to tend to that was a higher priority than my job. And that disrupted the ability to, for us to, you know, put out free content for people to consume. But one star because I didn't give you enough content that you like it, I thought it, that would at least be like a three star, like, you know, because like, hey, you like the content. You just aren't, you just wish there was more. So I don't know, whatever. Again, I'm trying not to be offended. But,
well, that's okay. So this is where maybe
that's my fault. This was my fault.
We should cut out the host complaints, because I could see this going in the wrong direction. You know, when
a whole bunch of new
reviews are going to show up for people saying terrible things about
Eric
us. It's like,
yeah,
here we're hammering on the terrible things.
No. Okay. So, all right. Let me clarify. Yes, I'm sorry that the content isn't out there. I had other priorities. I hope as new content comes out and more podcasts come back in that it changes, you know, I hope so.
Yeah. That's... Oh yeah. Well, it's a slow period anyways. What are we going to do?
No, I mean, look, it couldn't be helped. Like I literally, if I could have made a podcast, I would have, but, I have responsibilities that I had to take care of.
I love mice. Five star review.
Nice.
But I love mice said, I was a second rate meathead throughout the show. First time I've ever been called a meathead.
Yeah. I don't so think that, I've
that,
ever,
a lot of
I don't
credit
think I've
goes
ever
to I
heard
love
that.
Mice for that one.
Okay. That's I think the first time. Again, I think new audience just doesn't understand, you know, the humor. But
and then plus growth on May 17th, one star, occult lame. Please don't have this bozo back on.
Right.
Fair point. Fair okay. point out of plus growth. I can't
no.
argue with that.
Okay. Look, you can't. I can. Look.
Don't do it, Eric.
Joe. <yeah. laughs> I won't. I'll try not to. But the thing is this is, you know what episode this is for you and I? How many podcasts you and I have done together? This is 307.
I was going to say 306 or 307.
So if you've not been on the podcast, or if you're listening and this is your first time hearing Joe, welcome. Joe's been on this podcast
welcome aboard.
307 times before. And so he is the co-host of this podcast. Like, he's not going anywhere. And, and I know there's a lot of people out there that, that love to hear your meathead comments and stuff, you bozo. So, look, I get it. The critics are fine.
They're at least engaged with the show and want to review.
I'm trying,
it. We appreciate that.
I'm trying to be outraged, as part of being fun, but I'm just having fun with it. Like now, I say this now that I'm having fun with it. At the same time, if any of those listeners were listening and they heard me like getting mad and they didn't listen to me qualifying this right now, then we probably lost them, and I apologized. But
well, I'm don't apologize now. We already lost them.
Yeah. All right, well, sorry. sorry to everyone else who had to entertain or had to listen to that.
All right. Doing great on Spotify, keeps trending upward, staying at five stars. So that's great there. Nice. We appreciate everybody reviewing. We appreciate everybody listening. And the comment about not enough content there, right? We'll get more out there as the weeks get along, and we'll be back on our regular schedule soon enough. You know, it's just the off season.
So just to speak on that for a second.
Oh boy.
The Pride of Detroit podcast is in the works. We're still working on trying to bring that back. I have, you know, the Good Morning Pride content that we had was meant to be a temporary, just a temporary source here. At the same time, I know I'm hoping to have Jeremy on, and we're going to talk about what he saw at OTAs and minicamp. I know Miko wanted to come on and have a conversation with me, so I'm going to try and get a couple more of those up as well. In addition to, episode 308, 309, 310, right? All those other ones that Joe and I are going to do. We've got summer mailbag to talk about. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about the roster. We'll do our roster stack that we try to do each off season ahead of training camp. And we've got more content planned now that my life is kind of settling back down and some of the personal things that I had going on are resolving themselves. Ideally we'll get back on schedule.
All right, that's it. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.